Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Editorial. It is, what is today? Today's Tuesday, the 11th of October. Mariners are playing the Houston Astros for the wild card spot to play in the World Series. It's really, really interesting that the Seattle Mariners have gotten this far. By the way, Jim and I were talking off mic. We're getting some new listeners, you folks in South Carolina and around the country. Welcome in. I tell you, particularly South Carolina, I know how Jimmy feels about living there, and I'm jealous is all I can say. Jim and I were talking off mic regarding Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard's reason for leaving the Democratic Party, and we're going to talk about that here momentarily, but before we do that, we're going to talk about her reasoning, which is that most of the wars that the United States has been involved in my lifetime, which is the past 78 years, have been started by the Democratic Party. Jimmy, I'd like you to elaborate on that, if you would.
Well, yeah, okay, Will, and I do want everybody, as we start the show here, just to say that, hey, we promised we'd talk about Ukraine, and we'll talk about Ukraine after we go kind of through this process.
You bet.
Hold on. But so let's go back through our history. Our first major real conflict. Well, we had War of Independence, our Revolutionary War, and then of course the War of 1812, where the British thought that they could go ahead and, take us.
Yep.
We had a couple of little minor incidents after that, but the first real major destructive war after the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, was the Civil War. And how did that start? That started with Democrats who wanted to protect their property rights.
Yep.
And their property rights included human beings.
Yep.
So that was, that's a kickoff for Democrats. And then we had the Spanish-American War. We had a couple little incidents, but really World War II was Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
And Woodrow Wilson really wanted the U.S. to get involved in the war. Most Americans did not. Historically, we look back at it as a positive moment and a change where the United States became basically a world power,
mm-hmm.
though it wasn't really popular with most Americans. But Woodrow Wilson, he was an idealist. He was an educator, a professor,
yep.
and his idea, very liberal and also very racist. He codified segregation in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that, but Woodrow Wilson did that. He failed to take actions that might have prevented actually the escalation of the European theater and the war prior to the U.S. involvement. But then some people say, and this is, quite questionable, but he orchestrated the efforts for the U.S. to get involved, and of course we did have a lot of major life. It did end the war. We tipped the balance for that. And
yeah,
my position is now it's sad, but what we did was based on good values, and it did change the world. But at the same time, World War One was never finished.
No.
Until World War Two, and then World War Two beget Korean and Vietnam expeditions for the United States.
Yeah.
And let's remember, the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was in charge in the build-up and the lead-up to World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a Democrat, very social-minded Democrat who started many, many things that were very negative to the United States.
Yeah.
And of course, kept us in depression. The worst years of the Depression, many people don't realize this, but the worst years of the Depression were actually going into his second term
yeah.
in office. He didn't yeah. bring us out of depression. World War II and, quote, the arsenal of democracy, building all the weapons and selling them to anybody.
Yeah.
Because we were selling them to the Soviets, weren't necessarily our allies, but they became our allies because of FDR.
Yeah.
And he basically sat on his behind and pushed issues and really kind of pushed us into the war, in my view. And I think he wanted to get involved. Most Americans didn't. He had the power in the House and the Senate, yet he was very afraid of the Republicans who were in the anti-war or the America First movement.
Yeah.
And of course, that was mixed with what we see looking back on it. They looked at the America First movement at the time as, hey, look, we need to stay away from this stuff. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
But now, historically, looking back on it, a lot of people say, oh, that was Nazi support. Well,
yeah.
Most American immigrants were actually, the majority of American immigrants were from Germany. There was a lot of connection with people like Charles Lindbergh, very staunch America firster and actually German supporter, because they did not understand what was happening in the objectives that the Nazis were doing. But they were actually quite afraid of the socialists, too, and because a lot of people didn't understand. A lot of people were protecting the Soviets, including the New York Times and many reporters. They were protecting Joseph Stalin because of an ideology. So as we talk through history, we look at these major events, and then what do we roll into after World War II? We have a standoff. Patton isn't allowed to go forward with on the Russian front.
Yeah.
And then we have Korea, and of course, MacArthur's fired. Eisenhower comes in, stops the conflict. A few years later, we have JFK initially sending special forces, building the Green Berets, actually, and sending them in Vietnam. And then Johnson, his successor after the assassination, doing the massive buildup in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then Nixon negotiates, pulls us out.
Right.
And really, those are the major battles that we get into until, we have a couple of minor skirmishes with Grenada and Panama. And
pretty much until the Middle East, And I'm not sure I would call a lot of the actions in the Middle East even close to what would happen in Vietnam. You know, the thing in Vietnam, having done quite a bit of reading about it, I didn't serve in Vietnam, but having done quite a bit of reading about the historical aspects of Vietnam, really the escalation and failure of the United States, I would have to say, if you want to call it failure, that's kind of a matter of opinion, but the bad actions of the United States were pretty much instigated by Lyndon Johnson.
He bumped us up to 170.
Democrat. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
He bumped us up to 175,000 troops.
Right.
Was pushing very hard, but actually wasn't able to communicate why he was doing it.
Yeah.
Many people didn't understand. And the left were the ones that were attacking him, which is very interesting, because now we've got, the left fully supporting these warmongering ideologues.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons that she claims that she has left the Democratic Party. We're going to get into
Tulsi Gabbard. Yeah,
we're going to get into that right now. I happen to be a Tulsi Gabbard fan, not because she's a gorgeous surfer girl, but because she's highly educated. She is a military veteran of combat. I think the woman is truly, truly rounded out, and I'm proud of her as a politician. I was proud of her when she was a Democrat, but I'm even more proud of her now that she has switched to the Republican Party. Jimmy, give me
an opinion. Hey, we don't know yet. She hasn't said she's gone to the Republican Party, but she definitely walked away from the Democrats.
Yeah, she has. There's no question about that. And maybe she'll show her true colors and come out as a libertarian. I don't know. It's interesting to say. The one comment I would make is, depending on how the primaries turn out, depending on how depending on the strength that Trump exhibits, depending on what happens with DeSantis, I could see Tulsi Gabbard, if Trump backs away, I can see Tulsi Gabbard as being an excellent running mate for DeSantis. Comment?
Yeah, I don't know if she'd be. I don't really agree she'd be a good running mate for DeSantis. And I think it's because ideologically she's still very social oriented. And that's typical of a Hawaiian. You know, she comes from an area that's, kind of socially liberal. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that she's down deep, like most human beings. They're actually libertarian at heart, and they just don't realize it. And they're manipulated by information, and that information helps them shape their political attitudes, and then, of course, using emotion to turn them. I think what she says, though, is that the level of corruption, the manipulation, the failure to support basic foundations of American values are the things that she's were against with the Democratic Party. And here's what's really interesting about this, Al. She was actually one of the co-chairs of the DNC.
Yeah.
If you remember in 2016, she was axed because she was a Sanders supporter.
Yeah.
So, right there, I'm going to say, hey, if she supports Bernie Sanders, then, she hasn't quite grown up enough yet for me.
Yeah.
But I think she is growing up. I think she is learning more, and she's realizing what the socialist ideologies and the leftists are doing. And they're doing it at all costs. And she knows personally of what happened when she was pushed out of the leadership because of the Clinton campaigns and the Clintons' power. And now what we know, this is, I think, a very interesting opportunity, because she's an insider that probably knows where some of the skeletons are buried.
So it'll be interesting to see what she comes out and has to say on the record, Jim.
Yeah, it will be. And I think that, I think it's a, you know, she says the right things. You know, she does a lot of, and she's really, really maturing in her politics.
No question about that.
I'm impressed with her.
Yeah.
I don't think she's going to be a good running mate for a conservative. I just don't think you're going to get, you've got to pull in the Christian conservatives. You've got to pull in, and with a social kind of orientation that way, you may get middle grounders. It may be helpful that way, but it's a risk. So I would think that she may be a good cabinet member.
Yeah,
I think she may be a good supporter if she falls in and says, "Hey, look, I see a new Republican Party rising," and I do myself personally.
So do I.
And I think it's kind of getting away from the Mitch McConnells and the McCarthys, the Romneys, the people that are in it for themselves in the buck and think they know what's going on over their people. I think there's a possibility she could be a big influence. I know over time she will be.
Yeah, over time she will. There's no question about that. I think that because of her past philosophy and because of her accusations are going to come out, I think start to come out in this primary, I think she will be viewed as bringing the country together, the best of both sides, very possibly. Jimmy, you know, we've been going about 13 minutes. I don't mind going as long as we went yesterday, which was about 20. I think I finally edited it down to about 18, but that's a pretty lengthy editorial. But there is so much to talk about today. I'm going to turn the situation regarding Putin and his missiles, I'm going to turn that entirely over to you right now, Jim. It doesn't look very good for Ukraine right now.
Well, it doesn't look good for anybody, but but just because Putin sent a bunch of missiles to Ukraine actually doesn't change the dynamic on the battlefield. These are intimidation tactics.
You bet.
And of course, what he targeted about 12 cities. And this is apparently, and I would say probably, in response to the bombing of the bridge from Russia to Crimea that
they
used for a resupply.
More than he used yesterday and the day before.
Right. Yeah. And over the weekend. And then now... Yeah. So in response, he's basically opening up the floodgates for precision weapons and missile strikes into, key energy, energy production areas in Kiev, Lviv, Dnipro, and Zaporizhia.
Yeah.
So those are very dangerous and potentially have serious impacts on overall Ukrainian energy production, which is, obviously as we go into winter, that's a big burden on the population.
Right.
However, he is still losing ground on most of the southern front and on the eastern front.
Yeah.
And these battles with this counteroffensive that's gone on now for, almost a month have actually taken a lot of territory back.
Yeah.
So look, we've got different opinions on, what Putin's doing and what Russia's doing and Ukraine. But let's just look at the tactical on the couple of areas in the Kherson region in Kharkiv, the couple of areas that the Russians are actually pressing offensives, small offensives.
Right. Yeah.
They are coordinating those offensives with three different types of forces. The first one is their regular airborne, or I shouldn't say regular, but their airborne troops. They're more aggressive airborne troops.
Yeah.
The second are conscripts that they're having to backfill because of the major losses they've taken.
Uh-huh.
And the third is the Wagner contractors, the basically paid mercenaries, the Wagner group.
Yeah.
Now, they do not have good command and control of any of these operations. And when you're looking tactically on a battlefield, you have to think very smartly about where you use your resources.
Yes, you do.
And, un- And the Russians right now are actually haphazardly and very poorly operating this entire war. A lot of people are screaming and yelling at the, you know, the general staff back in Moscow. And a lot of people are saying, hey, this, you know, just there's all kinds of problems here. Well, that's all true. But the problem is, you're going to continue to throw kids into the meat grinder as they're doing this massive call up with 300,000 more troops.
Exactly.
But you don't have a clear objective of what you're trying to hold. And holding territory is much harder than initial advances with you know, major offensive operations. Mm-hmm. Holding the territory, and I've said this from the beginning, is very tough. And in spite of, you know, the accusations that most of the people want to be inside those eastern areas want to be part of Russia, it's actually questionable. And whoever's got the guns and got the power are the ones that are going to make the determination that way.
Well, the one comment I would make about that is I am amazed that a country with the apparent, underline the word apparent, power of Russia is having so much trouble getting Ukraine to bow down, because they are having a hard time doing that, Jimmy.
Military operations are incredibly complex.
Yeah.
And they require the interoperability of joint forces, mm-hmm. air, navy, or, you know, marine, army, whatever, ground troops, air forces, and then supporting artillery fires.
Yeah.
The Russians have worked really hard to try to build that capacity up. But they still have some fundamental problems and weaknesses in their organizational structure. And they still fight a battle, and they train for a battle that was like World War II.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you're seeing the ramifications of that as they absolutely devastate and destroy a lot of urban areas that they're operating in when they get into a tough into a tough bind.
Yeah.
And, you know, these random missile shots, they're intimidating, but it's not going to stop. It actually – so the – biggest, strongest pushback in World War II in the UK was in when Germany was firing missiles into London. That's when people said, okay, I'm going to hunker down and there's no way we're going to lose this.
Right.
And conversely, the biggest, strongest willingness to fight back in Germany and the highest productivity years were in the last 2 years of the war mm-hmm. in Germany, as they were getting crushed with bombing.
Yeah.
And no ability to defend themselves.
Yeah.
So you're not really gaining ground by these broad strategic strikes that make no tactical sense.
Well,
and that's
going to
be a problem.
You know, having stopped and thought about what you just said, that is a very, very interesting point. You start bombing a country and all of a sudden the citizens of that country are totally against you because they know what's going on.
Yes, and that's the reality here. And remember, you know, this is, we got to go back to this.
Right.
Russia crossed the border and tried to take Kyiv. They tried to attack the Ukrainian population.
Right.
Now, whatever anybody wants to say today, what their objectives are, they initially did that, and I'll tell you, they mobilized people that they did not realize that they would mobilize. And it's becoming very, very painful for them.
Yep.
I've said it from the beginning. I'm going to continue saying it, and I think it's true. Putin lost this war before he started it because he did not realize what was going on behind the scenes.
Well,
I think U.S., you can blame the U.K., you can blame NATO and everyone else for it, but the reality is he started shooting. He attacked starting in 2014 in Crimea, and he's continuing to push that regardless of the justification. The Russian people, the Russian government had agreed for a sovereign Ukraine with the borders that existed before.
Right, right. I think regardless of how the Ukraine situation turns out, I think Putin, for all practical purposes, did lose the war before he started it. But right now, it's really hard to say. It's hard to say this bombing will morph into what you're saying, which is basically getting every Ukrainian citizen pissed off at Russia and willing to fight to the death. I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Well,
what I find to be interesting is, from what I understand about the situation with the missiles, they're getting pretty close to the NATO border.
Right, and then of course, big concern with NATO and Western Europe, and of course, everybody in the world, I hope, is that this continued pressure on Russia will create some circumstance where Putin decides to go ahead and go nuclear.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, personally.
I think that's a death sentence for too many people.
Yeah.
And I think that, look, Vladimir Putin and the Russian army is having a horrible time fighting a one quarter of the size military, right. Actually like a sixth of the size of the military.
Right.
How the heck would they stand against something that would you know, unify all of Western Europe? Whether you agree with it or not, he realizes there's limitations to his capacity and he can't get it. And every missile he shoots right now, these precision weapons cost a small fortune, as the United States knows. He does not have the capacity to continue to arm all of his forces and use these precision missiles and lose allies and lose support, which
Jimmy, let me say this in closing, because we're up to 22 minutes. I think the death knell for Russia in terms of worldwide international opinion and perhaps getting other countries involved in this deal would be to go nuclear. Jimmy, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Looking forward to tomorrow, man. Go Tulsi. Any final words?
Hey, I just I really hope people keep their heads on and we can actually come out of this with a negotiated deal.
I do too, Jim. God bless you. Thanks, man.
You bet.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.